Bonjour, patrons. Today, I want to shine the spotlight on the Eiffel Tower because I know a lot of you have visited it or will be visiting it, and it's such an interesting story. I'll also tell you about the renovations taking place right now, slated to be finished in 2024 for the Paris Olympics. The Eiffel Tower is one of the most visited places in the world, as she gets 7 million visitors per year. 86% of those visitors are not French, so it's pretty clear that even though French people today claim it as our biggest symbol, we don't take the time to go visit her ourselves as much as we should. I say her because to me, the Eiffel Tower is feminine, like a great ship. And it's probably because in French, she is la tour Eiffel. She is feminine, like all towers. I'm not sure most people know that the Eiffel Tower, inaugurated in 1889 on the occasion of the World Fair that marked the 100th anniversary of the French Revolution, should have been destroyed after 20 years. If they hadn't installed a radio broadcast station at the top of the tower in 1906, it might have been torn down. I am recording this in April 2022, and as we speak, they are replacing one of the major antennas on top of the tower. I know they removed the old one without any trouble. Now they need to install the new one. So if you see a helicopter hovering above the Eiffel Tower, looking dangerously close, that's why. Not only did the tower survive her initial 20-year run, but she's the symbol of Paris and of all of France. Sure, historically, the boat is the symbol of Paris. We owe that to Saint Geneviève, the patron saint of Paris. But ask around. Nobody knows that, especially not French people. The Eiffel Tower is our symbol. All of us who've been able to see it in person have had our picture taken with the Eiffel Tower in the background. Some of us like the view from the Trocadero, others prefer to walk to the Champ de Mars on the other side. The more ambitious visitors go take their shot on the Bir Hakeim Bridge. But we've all done it, whether or not we've paid the ticket fee and gone up to see her architecture up close. We want the photo in front of the Eiffel Tower. For this Patreon reward, I will give you a full tour of the Eiffel Tower and tell you about its genesis and construction. Listen to it again when you go to Paris and stand in front of the tower. It will give her even more meaning. When we build something, usually it has a purpose. Notre Dame is a cathedral, the Sacré-Cœur is a basilica, the Louvre is a museum and used to be a chateau for French kings, the Arc de Triomphe commemorates Napoleon's victories. But what is the Eiffel Tower? What purpose does it serve? When Eiffel presented his project, he wrote that he was going to build a tower that was 300 meters tall. That's 984 feet. And that was it. He called it the 300 meter tower. He didn't say what it was for because originally it wasn't intended to be useful at all. And of course, it wasn't called the Eiffel Tower yet. It was the 300 meter tower. The Parisians who saw it going up probably thought, what the what? Or more precisely, c'est quoi ce truc? Let's set ourselves in 1887. This is the year Parisians learned that the Champ de Mars was chosen as the place where the tower was to be built and that it was to be 300 meters tall. It would be made of cast iron, and some guy called Gustave Eiffel had designed it and would supervise the construction. Eiffel was well known as a bridge designer, with the railway industry in particular, but the public didn't know him at all. A large group of authors and intellectuals, which included Guy de Maupassant and Émile Zola, addressed a letter to the director of the World Fair calling the proposed tower useless and monstrous. They said it would be the dishonor of Paris because it would dwarf its existing glorious monuments. They said when visitors come to the World Fair, they will wonder why France chose this ugly tower to tout its refined taste, because that's the opposite of good taste. They said visitors would mock Paris because of this vertiginously ridiculous tower. Eiffel was anything but a genius at public relations. The documents he published to explain why the tower would be amazing all had to do with principles of architecture and how it would resist the action of the wind better than anything that large built before. And he went into great detail about how this would work technically. He had invented a new construction technique to build large bridge pylons, which he had patented in 1884. And he would use that same technique with the Eiffel Tower. This was to be the great French architectural feat at the 1889 World Fair. By the way, the need for this construction technique is a hint to you, dear visitor, that it's often windy and cold on the Eiffel Tower. Bring a jacket even in July. Plus, Eiffel had a point. Big towers were all the rage, and it was a race as to who could build a tower taller than all buildings in the world. In London, they had plans to build a 1,000-foot tower, and they never did. The obelisk in Washington, D.C. was inaugurated in 1885, but it suffered many setbacks, and it took 40 years to complete. And that obelisk is only 169 meters tall, so that's 550 feet, a little more than half of the Eiffel Tower. Eiffel almost doubled that, and he pulled it off in 2 years, 2 months, and 5 days. Paris was at the center of the world in those years. Anything and anyone who mattered came to Paris. Newspapers who targeted young readers wrote that this tower was a milestone in architectural knowledge. The Tower of Babel couldn't reach the sky because they didn't have French architects who know how to dominate nature with their enlightened modern engineering principles. We're 100 years past the revolution, and the people of France can do this because we have science on our side. Old curmudgeons said it was ugly, but young Parisians thought it was genius. And the 1889 World Fair in Paris was a great success. 35 million visitors came to see the 60,000 booths from 35 countries. You think Vegas puts on big exhibits? Try 60,000 booths! Despite its chaotic history, France showed herself capable of putting on the grandest event of the 19th century and show off its modern ways. The Eiffel Tower was a huge success. People weren't sure what it was for, but could tell that it was cool and new, and they were blown away. A sort of Eiffel mania took over the event. Newspapers all over the world published articles about it. Some of them published a new article about the tower every day. And the World Fair, which went on for almost 7 months, was the place everyone wanted to visit. In stores, they made clothes displays in the shape of the tower. They sold all sorts of items in the shape of this new wondrous monument. Jewelry, lamps, music boxes, paintings, neckties, wallpapers, shirt, embroidered pillows, handkerchiefs, salt shakers, you name it, they made it in the shape of the tower. The tower was everywhere immediately. Distractors of the tower kept talking smack about it. Supporters kept praising it. And newspapers sold a lot of copies relating blow by blow who said what about it. Gustave Eiffel's face was everywhere because, good press or bad press, his creation had stolen the moment. And honestly, it's hard to publish a bad photo of the tower. It catches the eye, and once people see it, they usually like it because it is beautiful and surprising. And this is true to this day. There were 107 projects presented to the committee that was going to choose a major architectural piece to represent France in the World Fair. But Eiffel had every chance to win because he was not wet behind the ears. He was 52 when the project started, and he had already built more than 300 great bridge projects all over, especially the south of France, Spain, Puerto Rico, in Asia, and because he wanted to use a material that was all the rage, stainless steel. French steel production was at its height. The Foulte Dupont factory that supplied most of the steel for the Eiffel Tower was located near Nancy in the east part of France. This was a model factory complete with cookie cutter houses built especially for the people working in the mines and in the foundry. This factory alone could produce 300,000 tons of steel per year. And Eiffel estimated that his tower would require 7,000 metric tons of steel plus 2,000 metric tons of bolts. It was traditional for steel workers to make the parts needed to build a bridge at the site of the bridge. This made it mandatory to have a lot of workers around a bridge site, plus a foundry. And there were always tragic accidents. Eiffel knew this because he built so many bridges in his career. For this tower, Eiffel wanted it to be assembled from already made pieces, like a giant construction set. There was no foundry on the site. The pieces were already cast. And they were not made of simple steel, but rather of puddling iron. Not sure what the difference is, I am not a chemist, but apparently that's really important. The orders had to be checked and rechecked several times. There were thousands of sketches and drawings and calculations, all done manually because the computer wasn't there yet. Eiffel did not do all of this by himself, by the way, of course. He had very close to him, he had two full-time number crushers and one architect, you know, and we don't give them credit for the work that they did and they deserve. But it would be really awkward if we called it the Eiffel Cochelin Nouguier Tower, and we could add a few other names. I mean, a lot of people were involved, obviously. The number of workers on site at the Eiffel Tower never exceeded 250 people. The job was to carefully assemble a 3D puzzle. Not a single mortal accident took place during the assembly of the Eiffel Tower. This was the case because skilled workers were hired, but also because the workers were not expected to improvise and solve problems. The problems were solved by the engineers before the pieces were ever manufactured. Other people who criticized the Eiffel Tower said that no sane man would want to work on this site because it would be deadly. And that was not the case at all, thankfully. Eiffel paid his workers a fair wage. There were only two strikes in a little over 2 years, which is nothing in France, especially in those days. And they did not last long because the workers got what they wanted quickly. Building the foundations of the Eiffel Tower was a challenge of its own. The four pylons go deep in the ground, but with the proximity of the river, the ground is very wet and soggy. First, they had to excavate all the sand, mud, and rocks and not allow the hole to cave in on itself. For that, they used frames plus lots and lots of quarry stones, 10 cubic tons of cast iron, cement, and massive pieces of rebars sticking out of it. The foundations are at an incline, which was not habitual, but what it does is that the tower pushes down as well as outward, and that's why it's still standing today. That's a design Eiffel had tested time and time again with his bridges. If you think about it, bridge pylons are like the Eiffel Tower because you have to build a solid structure over water in a soggy, wet area. And Ifo went on the job site every day. He hired people he knew he could count on because he had worked with these people for decades. But he was very hands-on, just like he was with the construction of his bridges. Now, here's where I get to criticize Ifo. When they got to the construction of the first floor, Ifo wanted to use the space to celebrate the best scientists and engineers by having their names engraved on the tower. And if you squint or bring binoculars, you can see them. They're still there. Sadly, it didn't occur to him to include a single woman on that list, even though it is extremely clear that some should have been. Take Sophie Germain, for instance. She should have been included because she was the math genius whose calculations engineers used to work out the elasticity of the tower. Eiffel decided to include the name of two guys who invented a new process for making soap, which isn't exactly rocket science, but a woman math genius? No, no need to include her. Eiffel was definitely a man of his time, and should he reappear in polite society today, we'd probably find him reactionary and narrow-minded, but so were most men who mattered back then. Sometimes I wonder if it's not still the case. Anyway, dignitaries came from all over the world to see the Eiffel Tower. The American dignitaries French people were most excited about were Buffalo Bill and his troupe of sous who put on a show every night. Now that wouldn't fly today, would it? But in 1889, everybody loved it. In 133 years, the Eiffel Tower has been repainted 19 times, which means she needs a new paint job every 7 years. And it takes 3 years to paint the tower from top to bottom, which is how they do it. The original color of the tower was called Venetian red, and that's the color workers applied to the cast iron pieces in a workshop. Eiffel had a big workshop in Levallois-Perret, not far from Paris, and that's where they applied this Venetian red. As soon as it was built, Venetian red was covered with another coat called bronze red. That's the color it was during the World Fair. In 1892, the color went to bronze ochre. Then in 1900, it was painted yellow with an orangey yellow at the bottom, going lighter and lighter until light yellow on top. And that is done to ensure a uniform perception of the color from the ground. But Eiffel didn't love that yellow. So in 1907, Gustave Eiffel opted for a more uniform bronze yellow that remained its color for 47 years. In 1954, the paint went back to bronze red. And in 1968, they made a special color just for the Eiffel Tower. And that's a color we saw for the longest time. It's a bronze color called Eiffel Tower Bronze. The Eiffel Tower is undergoing a 300 million euro renovation due for completion in 2024 for the Olympic Games in Paris. And this is what they're working on. The light beacon on top of the tower is a new 6,000 watts xenon bulb. It rotates around 360 degrees and is visible 80 kilometers from Paris. This year, that's 2022, the paint job is almost done and it looks more yellow than it did 10 years ago. And again, the color gets lighter as you go up the tower. Perhaps you can spot the workers dangling on cords on the tower because now they're reaching the lower levels. They look like they're wearing space suits and they have a paint apparatus tied on their right side. The budget for the paint alone is 60 million euros. And this is a job site where you do not want workers dropping their paint buckets for obvious reasons. Everybody loves the Eiffel Tower's sparkle, which takes place for 5 minutes every hour on the hour after sunset until 1 a.m. So the first sparkle changes depending on the time of year you visit. There are 22 2,000 light bulbs flashing, and they will all get replaced in 2023. The north elevator is getting a complete refurbishment, which means that it's out of operation and that will last for 3 years. Each elevator can take up to 750 visitors per hour, and they'll be operating with two elevators only until 2024. Even if you show up with your ticket in hand, which you should, there is always a line for the security and for the elevator at the Eiffel Tower, and nothing can prevent that. Some days are way better than others, you know. Usually, there are fewer people at the Eiffel Tower later in the afternoon and early evening. So if you don't have tickets, go in the evening. All around, there are now plexiglass panels, special plexiglass, it's more complicated than that. They protect visitors from bullets and ramming with a car or a truck because there are crazy people in the world, and it's important to keep them away from a site like the Eiffel Tower. The gardens around the Eiffel Tower will now have walls similar to Paris parks, which means they'll open and close at specific times. This is done for security, but it's really impressive how calm it can feel sitting around the gardens around the tower. The second floor of the Eiffel Tower is actually on two levels, and it includes the Jules Verne restaurant. Both levels of the second floor are getting renovated little by little, but access to most of the space is still open to the public. And by the way, besides the Jules Verne, which is a luxury restaurant run by Alain Ducasse, where you'll spend at least $500 per person, there's also a restaurant called Le 58, so the 58. It's on the first floor, and there it's more like 50 and up per person. And the view to the Trocadero is pretty nice, because you're not so high. Both of these restaurants require reservations. Otherwise, you can also buy sandwiches, drinks, and macarons. There's now a macaron bar on the second floor, but those have no seating. And there's, of course, a champagne bar on the third floor. Before I go, I should mention that you can look around under the Eiffel Tower without a ticket. All you have to do is go through security, but they don't check your ticket for the Eiffel Tower until you reach the end of the elevator line. So even if you have no desire to go up the tower, you should go and check it out up close. It's an amazing structure. As far as Gustave Eiffel, he owned his tower for 20 years, after which he agreed to turn it over to the city of Paris, which was supposed to recycle it for scrap metal. And of course, it never got to that, because by then they couldn't imagine Paris without the Eiffel Tower, and neither can I. So thank you, Mr. Eiffel. You've certainly shown all of us how a tower with no definite use has become the symbol of Paris for everyone in the world, and a place I enjoy visiting every time I'm in Paris. I don't go up every time. As a matter of fact, I've only gone up 3 or 4 times, I think. But there is so much to do and see around the Eiffel Tower that I always end up going near it. But that will be the topic of another French history brief, because there is so much to do around the tower. Do you enjoy the Eiffel Tower as much as I do? I'd love to hear from you in the comments. Perhaps you have a favorite restaurant or museum near there, or a wonderful memory that you'd like to share. I would love to hear it. Thank you so much for your support of Join Us in France, patrons. I could not do the podcast without you. Merci, au revoir.